It makes sense that a society that likes to be entertained as much as ours would use TV and film for educational purposes. Remember all those films in elementary school about science and hygiene and good citizenship? A lot of films like that got made in Oregon and then left the state when their useful lives were over. Well, some of them are coming back now, displayed in a series of venues around the state in the coming weeks. Let's find out where they went in the first place and why they're back. And as soon as I say the place where this person works, you'll know where they went. Andy Urich is the film archivist at Indiana University Library's Moving Image Archive and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Andy.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for joining us today. Are these like the films we used to watch in school with titles like Am I Trustworthy and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's definitely some of them. And so we'll be playing a few of those films that sometimes are called social hygiene films, right, that were teaching you sort of how to behave, how to be sort of a good person. But the exciting thing about this type of filmmaking is it's such a wide and diverse range of topics covered and styles. So there's going to be just a wide range of stuff that we're bringing back to Oregon.
Did Oregon make an outsized number of its own films? I mean, these films have a connection to Oregon in some sense, don't they?
Yeah. Some do and some don't. And that's sort of, it happened all over the country where there was national distributors of educational films. But at the same time, local universities, local filmmakers would make these films that would sometimes be about local topics or sometimes not. And so the question is, you know, even if it's made in Oregon, does it still have value to Oregon residents now as sort of a unintentional documentary of the past, right? So that's sort of one of the things we'll be sort of exploring is the way that these films are and aren't about Oregon and Oregon history and Oregon people. They weren't made to be some, you know, necessarily. It might be like a way to make better agricultural products, right?
Right.
That could have been shown nationally, but because it's shot in an Oregon factory, it becomes a documentary of the state.
That's a great term, the unintentional documentary.
Yeah.
Let's hear one of these. We pulled off the audio from a clip from one about Oregon moon lava. Let's listen to a bit of that.
Be many secrets of the solar system revealed during man's exploration of space. Will extraterrestrial surfaces resemble any of those found on Earth? The University of Oregon is one of the many places where geologists and scientists are studying types of volcanic lava that may exist on the moon or planets. Let's study some of the areas of interest. Layers of the volcanic rock and dust are suspected. Pumice is a common volcanic rock. During violent, gassy eruptions, the light, frothy material is scattered over the countryside in coarse and fine layers. Aa lava is another common type of rock that could exist. The hard, rough, black lava forms flows.
All right, we get the idea here. Oregon moon lava. Well, here we get into the realm of what you meant by the unintentional documentary. We get to document the things we thought might have happened on the moon. I'm going to guess that's about 1958 or so.
It's actually 1966. So
really?
It's right before, you know, the trips to the moon a couple years later. And so, but I think when you say the 1950s, that makes sense because it starts out with a sort of like almost 1950s science fiction.
That organ soundtrack. Music, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and it shows pictures of sort of like outer space, you know, very sci-fi. And then it cuts to a scientist, a professor in Oregon, sort of showing all the different kinds of lava. And then it turns almost like a travelogue of going across the state and showing different parts of sort of like, you know, rocky exteriors. And it sort of ties this question of Oregon geography and the Oregon countryside to maybe the moon into the space race. And so it shows like an astronaut in spacesuit sort of trying to walk over the rocks. And the idea is that NASA will use that area to sort of think about what the astronauts might come into contact with on the moon. So there's an example of now the moon's a pretty known thing to us, right? We've been there. But before that, it was still a mystery. And these films that were made to be taught, you know, teaching Oregon geography or teaching geography in general, were tied into the sort of the cultural events of the time, right? So that movie was made in 66, tied to the moon race.
Right between the time that Kennedy said we're going to put a man on the moon and we got a man on the moon.
Exactly. And so one of the things that's great about these films is the topic might be not particularly exciting to a wider audience, but the ways that it ties into the concerns of the time are really fascinating. And one, again, this was made by this filmmaker. I've not been able to find much else about this filmmaker named Willard Trumbull. And it sort of turns into almost like it looks like a family vacation, because there's these two young teenage boys who are like looking at rocks, and I assume that's the filmmaker's kids, sort of. So it becomes this sort of document of this person's family in a unexpected way. So it's got a lot going on. And just to see sort of the tourists traveling through Central Oregon in the mid-60s is a whole other different sort of, I think it's exciting to see.
Sure, a real snapshot in time. Andy Urich is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, film archivist at Indiana University Library's Moving Image Archive, and he's bringing some of these great educational films from Oregon from many years ago back to the state for a little bit of a tour. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. So why did they end up at Indiana University? What did somebody just pick up the whole bulk of films from Oregon that were stored someplace else and take them there?
Yeah, pretty much. So these kind of films, as you know, you're sort of talking about, were common everywhere, right? So now I think if you wanted to find something, you'd almost go to YouTube, and a lot of that stuff would be up there now. But I did
actually find Am I Trustworthy and Hemo the Magnificent on YouTube yesterday.
Yeah, a lot of these films are up there, but a lot aren't. And so a few of them, I picked films that are sort of like the hits of social hygiene educational films, if there can be such a thing. But some of these films, like Oregon Moon Lava, haven't been digitized. So this will be the way to sort of see them. And one, it points to the vast numbers of these films that were made. We're talking, you know, tens of thousands of films like this. But your question about how they got here, so it was pretty common for universities or school districts to have huge collections of these films that they built up over decades. And then starting, you know, in the 70s and 80s with the coming of videotape, these films that were used, you know, regularly in classrooms became a burden on school districts and public libraries. So places started getting rid of them over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. And so around 2010, 2011, we were contacted and asked if we would take the whole batch. And so in some ways, you know, we were taking it, Indiana University, when I say we, were taking them sort of off the hands of the school, the service district, the school system. And they shipped up pallets and pallets of, you know, 12,000 reels of films, and they were shipped out here.
So somebody has to catalog them, put them into a system, into a database, I'm thinking, and then watch them as well.
Yeah, it's a pretty, yes, that's all happening. So actually, we got the 12,000 reels of film. About 8,000 of them you can find in Indiana University Library's online catalog, this guy called IUCAT. So they're up there. You can search for them. But in terms of the sort of behind-the-scenes library archival work, yes, it's a massive, massive job, partially because a lot of these films, like the ones we've been talking about, like you said, some are known on YouTube, but some of them require a lot of sort of research to figure out what they're about or who they might have been screened for or who made them. So it's a pretty big task. And as a film historian, it's a really exciting sort of unexplored area in terms of making sense of all this.
What's a real gem that has popped out of the pile for you?
You know, I have really loved the films that are sort of Oregon specific. So one like Oregon Moon Lava, there's a film called Dungeness Crab Meat Extraction that was made with Oregon State University and it's about how to efficiently remove meat from crabs. And so it really is just like a training film about, you know, how exactly to crack it open and how to flick it to get the meat out.
So it's for crab workers, not for people eating it?
Exactly, for crab workers at a factory, precisely. And it's a way to do it more efficiently, to do it less dangerously, to be more hygienic, right? So on the one hand, you get a sense of how scientific a lot of our food production is, which you don't necessarily think of when you're just eating it. But this film, like a lot of these films, have moments of sort of, again, this like, now looking back at it, I've become oddly beautiful. So there's parts in slow motion where you just see the crabs getting cracked and the meat coming out. And it's I'm not a meat eater. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't find it interesting in that sense. But it becomes this really abstract kind of thing now looking back at it. Though at the time, you'd use slow motion, so the workers in a crab meat factory could figure out precisely how to do it.
It's so interesting. Again, I didn't thought about the fact that, you know, you're not about not talking about just keeping records of people, places, and things. You're talking about how people did things at certain points in time, which will change over time.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially stuff with like sort of food production, which we think of becoming sort of mass agriculture business, and we're seeing maybe a move back to small farms. So a lot of these films that are talking about these sort of processes, how things were made, that don't exist anymore, or you know, are coming back with an interest in sort of local production again. So there's a lot of that sort of lost knowledge. I mean, it's fun to look back at these films and sort of see what people did regularly for work that sort of doesn't exist anymore.
Well, and then back to the social hygiene section, too. I mean, there are lots of things that we learned. Again, I had to go looking for Am I Trustworthy on YouTube, yeah, and found it there. But there's one that came out of Oregon in this pile that came back with you called The Bottle and the Throttle. Let's hear about this one.
Sure.
It can't happen to me. That's what you said, wasn't it, Bill? But it can and just did, and you're not quite sure why. Let's see if we can find out. Not too many minutes ago, that young woman and her child were happy and healthy. Now their young bodies are crushed and racked with pain. Maybe they'll live and maybe they'll die. But one thing's sure, the next few minutes, hours, or maybe days, their lives will hang in the balance. And you'll have to live out those minutes, hours, and days knowing you were responsible. The police will measure out the skid marks, determine where you applied the brakes, give you a sobriety test, and it will all go into a report that will be reviewed in court. Maybe you'll be found guilty. Maybe you won't. But you'll never outlive the memory of waiting. Waiting to find out if the mother and daughter will live or die. Then the police are at you with questions. Where had you been? Had you been drinking? Would you submit to a sobriety test?
Sure, why not?
That's from The Bottle and the Throttle. It's a cautionary tale on drunk driving that is a film, an educational film made in Oregon many years ago. One of the films that Andy Urich is now in possession of as film archivist at Indiana University Libraries Moving Image Archive. You know, it's amazing how many memories these kinds of films bring back. And I'm not just talking about the wavering sound and the fluttering pictures, yeah, we got so used to with the old 16 millimeter projectors. But it reminds me of other things I saw. And in fact, the first thing I asked Emily when she put it up was if this was the one where they sliced the guy's brain open to see what alcohol had done to his brains. I remember seeing that one in seventh grade. So it seems like each one triggers memories in people.
Yeah, it's unavoidable that the degree to which the connection between certain forms of media and our personal histories and personal nostalgia. I got into this business sort of unintentionally, again, that word, but because in second grade I became an AV geek and I was projecting these kind of films in classrooms.
You and me both.
Yeah, so, and I, you know, one, I think it brings that point to the fore, right? So maybe kids today are going to remember going to YouTube, you know, in 20 years to watch stuff. So there's that connection between, like I said, our personal biographies and the ways we've experienced these, and especially when you're young, these some of these films were pretty terrifying or pretty impressed. You know, they are impressed in our brains. So I think that's definitely a part of it too. Is there's going to be, like you said, these personal reminiscences of watching the stuff in the classroom.
So
and then sorry, go on.
Are these actually being projected then? They're not digitized and saved on DVD?
No, we're bringing the film prints. We're going to project them off of a portable 16-millimeter projector in the room. So that's part of, I think, the fun of doing these kind of screenings is, you know, for those of us old enough to remember it in the classroom, you know, there's that sort of nostalgic joy. For younger people, they get to experience film projection in this way that they never have before, and part of the enjoyment is the machine, right? It's the mm-hmm. technology. It's sort of bringing that to sort of our consciousness when we're thinking about this.
I used to love that button on the Bell & Howell projector, system restorer.
Yeah, exactly. you know, that connection between the specific technology and how maybe, you know, the classroom screenings would have operated or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same, you know, the nowadays it would be like, you know, you can't buffer the streaming video or something like that.
Right. So is there a plan, though, to do preservation work or otherwise digitize the film so that once they can, because they're going to break at some point, I would think.
Yeah, well, we have multiple prints of things. So you know, if a print breaks, we have backup, and they're kept here at Indiana University in our auxiliary library facility at 50 degrees and 30% humidity. So that means they're going to last for hundreds of years. But there is that sort of preservation. But in terms of access, yes, Indiana University is committed to digitizing its media holdings, and we're planning now to how to do that for film. So I can't say when, but a lot of these films eventually will be digitized, and if copyright allows it, they'll be streaming for free. So that's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But you already talked about the difficulty of cataloging and researching these, add on digitizing tens of thousands of films.
Yeah,
it's a huge expensive job. One that's exciting to be a part of.
So you're showing these, I see, at a couple of different places. It looks like you have some libraries and even some pubs involved in this little mini tour.
Yeah. And depending where you show these films, it's a very different experience. We show these kind of films here in Bloomington regularly at sort of a pub, and we show a lot of the films from Oregon because they're really entertaining, and it's a different experience than showing it in a classroom or a library. So that's part of the fun is showing them in different places and having the audiences react sort of in different ways.
And I see that for the folks who listen to us in Eugene, they'll be shown this Sunday at the Barn Light at 7:30, and then the next night in Medford at Jefferson Spirits, at no relation to JPR, by the way, at 7 p.m. So a couple of pub appearances, one in Eugene on Sunday and one in Medford on Monday. It sounds like a really fun project and tour, Andy Urick.
I'm very excited to come to Oregon with these films.
Okay, good to have you here. Andy Urick is the film archivist at Indiana University Libraries Moving Image Archive, coming back to Oregon with some of the great educational films made in decades past. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right, that'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We will talk about Michael Jackson in hour number two coming up.